Pete. So Pete is a friend. Pete is also here in Fort Collins. Mm-hmm. He is a certified financial planner running his own company here in the area. And how did you know Pete?
I got to meet Pete in Toastmasters. Pete is a very good speaker. He's a very principled guy. And it's really cool in this interview for him to sort of share some of his thoughts. One of them about how he, again, sees servant leadership as vitally important and that he's trying to arouse in others a genuine want, something he learned from Dale Carnegie. And so supporting people in their needs is a vital piece of leadership. It's part of the whole reason you do these ripples to get out there. And what's also fun is near the end, you gotta listen to the end, you gotta wait for it, is that Pete talks about there's a certain something he discovered that not just the principles, but, well, I don't want to spoil it for you.
So enjoy our conversation with Pete.
The Ripple Leader Podcast, exploring powerful leadership from the inside out with your hosts, Chris Hutchinson and Josh Schuler.
So how about you give us a little background of, like, what do you do and who are you, and so that the listening audience can say, oh,
okay,
I know who I'm listening to.
Yeah, Pete Tomasi. I'm a certified financial planner. Mm-hmm. I own my own financial planning wealth management practice. And primarily what I do is I help my clients feel better and think better about their financial world. Because the extent that they start to have peace of mind of what they're doing with their own finances, then they can start to have impact in their own personal world. When mm-hmm. somebody is completely knotted up in their heart and mind about what's going on in their own financial world, what does their future look like, their kids' future look like, then they become very limited in what they do because they're paralyzed. They're paralyzed about every decision they make. And so the extent that I can help them really make sense of their financial world, and then the key really comes in is to aligning their finances with their values, helping them to articulate what is it that's important to you and why. And then how do we align your wealth strategies with your values so it really does, in their world, begin to create a ripple so that there is an alignment of their money, their values, for what they're doing now, but also for what they do in the future and then the legacy that they leave. And so my goal in working with, in this case, my clients, is to help them to understand their own behavior, their own values, and then how to align their wealth with that so that it's not just by making sure that their investments are right. That's certainly a piece of it, but it's really a whole life story. That's what I do.
That's really interesting because, I mean, I can imagine people saying, well, you're one person, so what's leadership to you? And on the other side, well, you're just serving people, so that's fine. But I hear an element of servant leadership in the way that you're showing up with your clients and trying to help them be successful, not just meeting a need.
Yeah, that's right. It really is about helping them take ownership and be leaders in their own homes. Some of my clients are business owners, and so they become leaders in their own business of how then they're giving direction to their employees and to their own customers. So it really does, you know, to really kind of reference back to your book, it's that idea of creating a ripple by really changing a mindset and changing an attitude of how do we look at money? What is the purpose?
Right.
Is it just a means to an end, or is there something more to it than that? In the past, before I started doing this, I worked for a nonprofit, and so I had a team of 20 people that worked with me, and we worked with 200 different entities, and we ran a variety of conferences and camps for kids and did a lot of leadership-type training. And so being able to help marshal people to their passions, get my team lined up so that we were really taking advantage of what they did well and not try to amplify what they didn't do well and figure that out, their strengths and weaknesses. But like we're talking about, really going on to what could I do as a leader so that they took ownership of it and they started creating their own ripples. Because my impact was limited to the extent that I impacted people is really sort of just my circle and the people around me. But my leadership team and the people that they were interacting with all had their own circles. And so what I really wanted to understand was, how do I impact them in such a way then that they become passionate about it?
Yeah.
And then they create their own sort of concussion and carry that forward.
There, I think it's Warren Bennis. I might be misattributing it, but there's a quote out there that says, the purpose of leadership is not to grow more followers. The purpose of leadership is to grow more leaders. Mm-hmm. So, and I hear that embedded in what you're doing. And another thing that's kind of interesting is that, you know, the first section is work on yourself, you know, lead yourself. The second section is lead others. And the third section is lead the organization. And I really wrestled with that lead others part. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a little part in there where I can't remember if I left the parentheses in or not, but there was a little S with the parentheses, you know, lead other. And I had people going like, what is that? And I said, well, the challenge is that if I say lead others, there's a real tendency for people to sort of see them as a blob. Every, you know, like as a financial advisor, you go, this is the best thing anybody can do.
Yeah.
You're just a client. Apply this, you will be successful. But you're going beyond that. You're going to, when I said lead other, it means like you as a person have a different set of needs, strengths, passions, interests, whatever, than the next person standing right next to you.
Yeah.
And I need to treat you differently and respect those differently, or be respectful of those as well as the other person. And other, you know, and I've had leaders go, well, that's just not fair. You know, that's just way too much work. That's what's going to make a difference, because your trajectory is vital. You know, we may harness it for a while in this organization, but you may go on and do something else.
Right.
How do we make those things line up and take that energy in the same direction? That's a big challenge.
It is a big challenge. And I think that one of the things that, you know, as we were starting to talk about, reference some of the similarities between the way you laid out Ripple,
mm-hmm.
and the way Dale Carnegie laid out his book, How to Win Friends, Influence People. One of his principles, I think it's the third principle, is arouse in others a genuine want.
Oh, exactly.
And so as I've worked with others and as I continue to work with my clients, that becomes a guiding principle. Because if it's just my want, they may follow depending on their personality. But once my input has ended, and once I'm no longer sort of pushing, they stop. But if I can really understand what their wants are,
mm-hmm.
and really understand what incentivizes them, and then apply some energy as a catalyst, then that can begin to fuel their own desire. And if the person is a leader, then they're going to take that and they're going to then magnify it, and they're going to continue that impact. Two things that I think really it took me a while to get a hang of is, been through a lot of mistakes, of course, was one, are we having fun yet? And I learned that people are not robots. You think you know that. People are not robots. It's not just, here's the task, let's go do it.
Plug in the formula and out spits the answers.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That works for a while, but it has a really muted effect.
Mm-hmm.
But when I started to really recognize that there was a real important element to, are we having fun yet? That it really began to humanize the whole experience. And to the extent that the people that I work with recognize that I was a human who wanted to have fun in the experience as well, and it wasn't just all work.
That's a stretch for most people to think of their bosses as human and wanting to have fun. But
it is a huge stretch. And Chris, I think what happens is, and I've seen this in different organizations I work with, the boss is afraid that if he's perceived as human, that people take advantage of him.
Yep.
That the employees will look at that as a weakness, and so the boss then always comes across as, you know, pervious, insincere, not transparent.
Invulnerable. Yeah.
And people then will work hard, but they'll burn out, and that ripple will never carry forward because they don't want to take ownership of it. They're not passionate about it because they think, this person doesn't understand what it's like to be a human being.
Right.
And one of the things that I discovered in working with the teams that I did was one of the easiest ways to see that you're human is to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so we tried to figure out, what does that look like to have fun?
Mm-hmm.
Which led me into the next piece as I just figured out, what does this look like for leadership, is governing assumptions. And so I started to recognize that there were a lot of things that I was assuming. But I didn't realize I was assuming them.
You mean you were assuming most of your stories were wrong? Is that what you're saying?
I was assuming my stories were wrong. I assumed that my team was always right. I assumed that everybody was like me, which was a real shock when I discovered that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
That everybody didn't think like me, and everybody didn't feel like me, and everybody wasn't motivated by things like me. So what I started to spend time with is just writing down all the assumptions. Sort of writing everything down that I'm assuming about my team, about their personalities, about our organization, everything that I'm just assuming that I have not verified.
Right.
And so I started to verify these things with them. You know, is this true? Yes or no? Is this true? Yes or no? Let's talk about this. And that helped me to understand the part about, are we having fun yet? And what does that look like? And what is fun to you?
Wait. So governing assumptions and fun. Help me connect the two. Yeah. So how did you discover fun out of yes and no, whether that assumption was there?
Well, because I wanted to make sure that we were having fun. Uh-huh. And this really was the impact of a young person that worked with us in our organization. And we were on a retreat weekend. It was sort of a leadership sort of training weekend. And I was getting very intense about what we were trying to accomplish and the goals that we wanted to achieve and the direction. And we were out playing volleyball. I was so worked up that I couldn't even have fun playing volleyball. And I was taking everything seriously, and I had to be up at the net and crushing everything. And Aaron said to me, he said, Pete, come on, can't we just lighten up and have some fun? I thought, I'm missing something here. Missing something important that he recognized. And so I started thinking about that. Okay, there's an important dynamic here. So I started to ask more questions about that. Mm-hmm. But I had to recognize that I was assuming certain things in order to get there. That for me, fun is going out and going into the 14ers and trying to climb as fast as I can. And for others, they want nothing to do with that. That's not fun. Mm-hmm. That's work.
Right.
And so I started asking questions of my team. What is fun for you guys? If we go on this retreat weekend, what is fun? When we get together for a couple hours and we talk about business and strategies and where we want to go as an organization, we want to do some fun things too. What is that? What does that look like? Asking my wife, what is that so that we have some fun? And so what I recognized with organizations that I worked with was that leaders that recognized that it was important to have fun with their teams, we got a lot more accomplished.
Nice. Now there's something else there that was intriguing in that interaction with, it was Aaron. Uh-huh. Is that a learned trait? Is that just how you've been? Is that, like, because I know so many people that, and myself as well, that I, like, someone gives me that data and I just discount it and I'm like, well, there's obviously I'm here and you're there.
Right.
You actually had the clarity in that moment to go, wait a second, there's something there. So how is it you got to a posture where when someone says that, you go, oh, maybe I'm thinking that my assumptions are right there?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think in part because I respected Aaron, because we had worked together for enough years that I appreciated his insight. He saw things differently than I did. He had a different approach. And so when he gave me feedback, I wanted to hear it. One of the things I really tried to avoid on my leadership teams were just a bunch of people like me. I didn't want that. I wanted people that saw things differently, that approach things differently, that had a different mannerism.
So why was that? That's not a common, I mean, a lot of people, if you're like me, you're normal. If you're not, you're abnormal. So what brought you there?
We've all heard it that if you have a team of four or five people and they're all the same, then four or five of them are redundant.
Okay, good. Well, we agree with you. I mean, maybe it's a good idea. But it's, you know, like when you're unaware, like a lot of people, and I hear a deep self-awareness here, and also a willingness to be introspective. And those two are vital. I mean, that's the first part. Like, if you don't know yourself, you're not willing to take some risks on your own part, nobody's going to make you do that.
Yeah.
Nobody, as a leader. I mean, they can. You can have environments that push you really hard, and maybe you get, but it's up to you to do that. And you're willing to do that. And it sounds like you get some really great results.
I did. I got good results out of it, and what came of it was more good results. This truly, in that respect, was a ripple effect because Aaron recognized that I was interested in his feedback, that I was open to what he had to say, and so I got more of it, which was helpful. And other people on the team saw that, heard that. I addressed them and said, you know what, guys, I'm sorry. I apologize for my behavior. There is a time for us to be very focused and try to get things done. There's a time for us just to lighten up and have fun, and I have not been doing that. So they felt very comfortable then being able to give me additional feedback.
So your vulnerability, your willingness to be open, and to change others, respecting, you know, and that's in some ways what's so fascinating to me at times is that it's like fingertip reach for almost everybody. I mean, you can just stop and say, whoops,
I'm sorry I did this, but there is something in the air or the water. When you get to be a leader, you feel like, well, I've been put in a position of authority, therefore I must be better than others, mm-hmm. right? I have to be, you know, perfect, or, you know, and of course we're not, we're human.
Yeah.
And I think by being more human about it, then you get the reciprocal of people saying, well, I can grow too. I mean, if the leader can grow, well, heck, I can grow, kind of thing. So,
yeah, and that's really the goal, is that continued growth for mm-hmm. all of us as a team, of what we value, of how we can move the organization forward, and then understanding why is it that we're doing. One of the things that I learned, if there was nothing more important than I learned the phrase as a leader, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Because I recognized that leader was simply a role, it was simply a title, it didn't make me
right.
better than anybody else.
Right.
It simply was because maybe I showed up first, maybe because I raised my hand higher than anybody else and said, I'm willing to do it. And that was it. But that there were so many skilled people that had so much understanding, so much intelligence, so many things that I could never begin to work with. I had people on my team that worked for NASA, people that were CFO at Exxon, that they did things that I couldn't begin to understand, but we had a like interest, and I needed to listen to them and pay attention to what they were saying if we were going to be able to have an impact.
Well, so I'd say you chose to listen to them, because
yeah.
there's other leaders who would say, this is the opportunity for you to listen to me, you know? So good. Well,
you know,
kudos to you. I know you've been humble and all, but
you know,
that's a strength. You have a strength in that. And a lot of leaders don't understand the strengths they have because they're like, well, you just have to do that. Actually, you don't have to do that. There's a lot of people who don't do that, and they cause problems. You know, it's more effective. There's not one way. There's not one right way. I think there are more effective ways. And it really sounds like you have embraced this even through your nonprofit career
mm-hmm.
and time into helping your clients on a one-on-one basis and a deep legacy.
Well, Chris, I think you and I know, and Josh, you know as well, that that's job security as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
That a quick way to lose your job as a leader is to stop listening to the people you're working with.
Wow.
Very true.
Because then you're going to be a leader of one.
Yeah.
You'll find that you're the
no
only
problems.
One going
right.
where you want to go, and nobody's interested in going, because
yeah, yeah.
There's a really interesting book by a man named Mr. Kahneman, who won the Nobel Prize for Behavioral Economics back in, I think it was 2005, 2006. It's called Thinking Fast and Slow. And one of the things that he talks about is the real problem that we have as people with overconfidence and our inability to recognize our overconfidence
mm-hmm.
and to not make allowance for overconfidence. And I think as a leader, we have to recognize that we are going to be overconfident.
Yeah.
And we have to get input from people around us to say, where am I being overconfident?
Right. Where am I kind of stepping out? And actually, I was going to sort of wrap up here and think about, and you've almost given us two tidbits already of sort of advice to leaders,
mm-hmm.
and people that are entering into leadership positions, people have been there a while and maybe they're not listening as much, or they feel like, hey, I've got this down. I'm good. I mean, what advice would you give them for to encourage them on this continued development thing you said that is vitally important?
You know, I would get back to two things that we've really kind of been talking through here is look at all the governing assumptions. You know, what assumptions are being made that have not been verified?
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, one of the best exercises that I did was just write them down, you know, for that leader, is just to write down all the assumptions about your organization, about your team,
mm-hmm.
about your mission, about your
mm-hmm.
whys, your hows, your whats. Just start writing and just fill out that paper and don't stop writing until you have exhausted all of what are those assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
And then start verifying them. Ask the people on your team. Ask the people in your organization. Ask your customers. Ask your clients. Start to get verification to find out what is right, what is wrong, maybe what is off, what needs to be adjusted a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then because we work with people, are we having fun yet?
Mm-hmm.
It is critical, because to the extent that we're having fun, it shows that we're vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
To the extent that shows we're vulnerable, shows that we are human, that we have passions and concerns and emotions, and people like to follow and are led by people. I think one of my favorite stories is near the end of the Revolutionary War, and things are not going well, and George Washington's officers have just about had enough, and they're really ready to be done. Washington approaches them, and he takes out his spectacles, shows his age, he reads a letter, and by the time he is done, officers in his corps are weeping because he has shown his humanity. He has shown that he is not this marble man that has not felt anything through those years. that he as a man has experienced what they have. And I think that when we ask that question, are we having fun yet? Mm-hmm. It shows that, mm-hmm. that we're people and that we value that. That's and that awesome. We value our employees.
That's awesome. Well, I certainly had fun. Josh, how about you?
Absolutely.
I'm having fun. I wish we could keep going. We can turn this thing off or we can keep going. But thank you for your time and for your wisdom and sharing some of your experience. I know that's going to touch somebody somewhere that says, wait, maybe I should ask this are we having fun question or there's some assumptions on what we're doing that might not be quite true.
Well, Chris, thanks for inviting me, Josh. Thank you. Yeah, I've enjoyed this time with you guys.
That's it for this episode of the Ripple Leader Podcast. For more about Ripple and Ripple Leadership, visit us online at rippleleader.com. You can order your copy of Ripple and gain access to other valuable resources. If you're on Twitter, follow and interact with Chris at @RippleLeader. Go out and make some ripples.